Yeah, there are many stress techniques out there, and probably some of you guys have heard of it. It's called a mindfulness or deep breathing. But for me, I have recently researched on the world's fastest method, and it's probably around 2 to 3 minutes. You guys want to try?
Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely.
Okay, let's do it.
Welcome to the Two Sales Guys podcast with your hosts, Sean Whitley and Matthew Sopiers. What's commonly talked about are the tactics and methodologies for sales professionals. What is less commonly talked about is the stress and anxiety that comes with being a seller. Each day, sales reps are asked to take rejection after rejection, operate in a world of uncertainty and high pressure, and either fail to hit their number or get a higher quota the next year. We'll talk about how to cope with these pressures and what a winning sales mindset really looks like. Sales is often called a performance business, and we'll explore how stress can drive bad selling behaviors. And alternatively, we'll look to experts on how you can manage your mind and wellness first so that you're putting your best foot forward every day at work. We'll talk to professionals in the industry who share the same experiences and what organizations can do to create a healthy, winning sales culture.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm so excited you joined us because we have a very special guest today. Dr. Adrian Lowe is a chartered psychologist from the British Psychological Society and a coaching psychologist from the International Society of Coaching Psychology. Dr. Lowe has graduated with a doctoral of clinical and industrial organizational psychology. He also holds a master's degree in education. Dr. Lowe's workplace stress research has won the Presidential Award for Doctoral Research Excellence at the California Southern University, and since then, he has been invited to be a keynote speaker in many conferences worldwide. Finally, Dr. Lowe is the president of the Hong Kong Association of Psychology, a not-for-profit organization. And with that, Dr. Adrian Lowe, welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks for having me, Sean and Matt. So nice to be in the show.
When Sean and I started this podcast and we started batting around ideas and for people that we want to talk to and concepts for different episodes, we thought that it would be really useful in the beginning to talk to someone like yourself that studied stress and understands it from a very scientific perspective. And we figured that we would have to do a lot of research into stress and ourselves as part of doing this podcast. But I think we both were really excited when we saw that you claim that you're a stress researcher, and that's something that you've spent a lot of time understanding. And so we're hoping for the conversation today that we'll be able to learn a lot about what is stress as we continue the podcast. And so the first question I wanted to ask you is, how did you become a stress researcher?
Well, in my opinion, there are actually two ways to become a stress researcher. So either the first way, you are doing a PhD in psychology, or the second way, you are a workaholic. And one day, you know, your body keeps score and you start researching ways to feel better. For me, both incidents happen.
Awesome. Okay. And our first, you know, big question, we're not going to give you an easy one in the beginning here. I guess we'll give you, you know, a hard one because there's a lots of different ways that you could answer this, but from your perspective, what is stress?
Wow, that's a big one. You know, stress, in my opinion, is both simple and yet abstract. Because how do you know whether or not you're stressed? Because stress can be, you know, subjective most of the time. An example I could think of is maybe, say, when you consume coffee, you may feel very energetic, but yet you could probably deny any hints of stressful feelings. And however, internally, our body's internal systems are getting depleted and the body may be keeping score. And because it may be stimulated by the effects of coffee, but the body just doesn't sound the alarm. Or in a way we could think of an analogy is that why a person who exercises regularly still gets a heart attack or stroke or some form of critical illnesses. So for me, I think a workable definition is, I like the how Hans Seres, the father of stress theory, he would put it as the wear and tear of the body.
I mean, that's interesting because one of the things we want to be able to help our audience understand is like everybody knows what stress is, but nobody really knows what stress is in terms of your body. So like, could you share like what physically is happening to your body when it's undergoing these stressful situations?
We can think about the medieval times when we are like Adam and Eve, you know, living in a wild forest. So imagine maybe a lion is chasing you. What's going to happen, right? Definitely our stress response will be activated. Our body secretes more of epinephrine, or in today's context, we talk about adrenaline and even glucocorticoids. So our legs and brain needs them. But what's the point? Because we need to run faster. We need to think of the fastest possible exit strategy from this lion. And during the process, our body will secrete less growth hormones or less reproductive sex hormones, because these parts of our body doesn't need them. Our gut doesn't need them, right? Our ear doesn't need them, not to mention reproductive systems. So people would probably complain that, hey, why are we trying so hard for a kid, you know, but we're still not getting them, right? And that's because, you know, their stress levels are highly activated. And these are parts of the body which intentionally gives up these resources for survival mode. Mm-hmm. And if we stretch this further, you know, we run away from the lion, we go to a safe environment, and then our body begins to restore itself. And I don't know if you guys have, if you guys could recall in biology, we learn about homeostasis, where the body would naturally, you know, help itself to restore to its appropriate state. So in a similar fashion, our internal system in our body have this multiple and very complicated homeostasis systems. But the good news is the body actually has the ability to reset itself. Mm. But I think the bigger problem is that when there's a lion that constantly chasing you 24/7, and in today's context, the lion could be your boss, you know, your client, your coworker, your partner, your kids, so to speak. But I think many of us, you know, are not even aware that there is a lion or who are the lions, you know, in our lives. So I think awareness is the first step, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love the analogy because it very simply puts it that you can't outrun a lion forever. otherwise, you know, you just can't. It's physically impossible. And I think it's probably the same for stress. You know, it's at some point it becomes impossible to manage subjecting yourself to stressful situations for repeated times over and over. And one of the things that Sean and I found really interesting when we were doing research ahead of this interview is that you did a study on employees' heart rate variability and workplace stress. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your findings in that study that you did.
Sure, sure. And also to help the audience to know a little bit more about what's heart rate variability, you know. Because basically it's a measurement of the beat to beat variance of the heart. So the greater the variance, the healthier the person. And for me, doing the research, which I conducted on over 85 full-time employees who are like working at least 40 hours per week in a large corporation in Hong Kong. And the results in general, it's in alignment to other stress research where we can see like the older employee, the unhealthier they are, or maybe the higher the stress, especially relational tensions, the more unhealthy they will be. But I think one of the very key astonishing finding which I found was that there was a significant positive correlation found between heart rate variability, which like is like the overall health, between intention to quit and heart rate variability. So that means that healthier employees may have higher intentions of quitting their jobs. And this is really interesting because it may also imply that employees who are left in the company are the unhealthy ones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the company perspective, you know, when employees are not in their healthy state, productivity drops, financial losses would happen. And a dilemma is how we need to think of strategies to retain the healthy ones. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I think it's twofold. And, to simply put, the entire workplace environment, you know, just needs to transform the environment to make to foster happier and healthier employees, so that employees continue to be productive, which leads to a win-win situations there.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, I think you've probably seen this before. I certainly have, where you talk to someone that either is about to leave a company or has just left a company. And it's almost like their physiology changes. They feel like they have a glow, an extra energy. And I would imagine that's what you're referencing, Adrian, is when people, you know, they leave a stressful position, all of a sudden things are better. So that's a pretty neat finding that you have in that study. Now, we, in the culture of sales, pretty well known that stress is inevitable and it's a part of the position. And I think there's even managers that would argue that stress is a good thing. What's your opinion on that? I mean, are there good types of stress? And, you know, obviously we talked about the bad types, but yeah, it'd be good to hear. Do you think there's good types of stress?
Yeah, I think for the sake of definition, you know, this definition has been around since the 1900s. You know, there were two psychologists at that time, Yerkes and Dawson. So they postulated that there are two kinds of stress. One is the bad stress and one is the good stress. And bad stress would include maybe the stress is too high or maybe it's too low. While the good stress is the stress that motivates optimal performance. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about how we deal with the good stress or the bad stress. And however, I would also add a point that the good stress itself has a time limit, and we have to make full use of that time limit. Otherwise, the good stress will become bad stress as well if it's not done within a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. And today we hear terms like procrastinations, and I would boldly define procrastination as the inability to complete tasks within the good stress time frame.
Like, what happens when stress builds up like that? Like, what happens to the body? What happens to the mind?
What happens to the mind? Well, that's a really, really good one. You know, when the stress system is activated, you know, our heart beats faster, just like when the lion is chasing us, you know, trying to bring this glucocorticoids or the oxygen to the vital parts of our body, such as our legs and our brain. And, you know, along with that comes with, you know, white blood cells. Again, this is part of the body's survival mode, you know. You know, our body is really smart, very intelligent. And we should appreciate that, you know, because, you know, let's say when a lion, you know, attacks us and we start to have some wounds coming up. And the good thing about the body system is that there will be white blood cells helping to heal these wounds. So if the lion attacks you, it bites you and you bleed, the white blood cells can help to heal the wounds. So therefore, you know, the higher the stress that we are experiencing, the higher the healing process, so to speak. However, there's a downside to this, because in our bloodstream, there are pathways known as bifurcations, like, you know, when a pathway becomes two, so this white blood cells would just constantly hit the bifurcations, and some debris, you know, they will start to pile up at the bifurcations. And after an extended period of time, the debris would start disintegrating itself and travel through the bloodstream. And we can imagine when this debris, you know, gets to the brain, what happens? We get a stroke. And if this gets to a heart, and what happened? You get a heart attack. Yeah. So you get a picture, right? So therefore, this is the physical aspects, how stress can lead to complications within the body. And the other thing to note is the emotional aspects, you know. So along with stress comes the emotion, especially the negative ones. Say, for instance, if you are frustrated with the immense workload that you have, you know, in the office, emotions can escalate. So it may become from frustration to anger the next moment. Emotions build up, and the worst emotional state would be depression.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's almost crazy to me that, you know, in some professions and cultures and businesses that we celebrate subjecting ourselves to stress over and over and over when there's such serious implications. You know, there's obviously business impact to what we talked about earlier, losing employees and burning out employees, but, you know, moreover, people just are unhealthy if they're subjecting themselves to this stress over and over. And I think you you said it really well, which is businesses really need to think about transforming the way they think about stress and how they help their employees manage it.
Yes.
If you're interested in educational videos to better yourself, we highly recommend The Great Courses Plus. The Great Courses Plus is a subscription video on-demand learning service that gets you unlimited, uninterrupted access to a world of learning anytime and anywhere you want it. With courses on thousands of topics, you're sure to find something that will ignite your curiosity and invigorate your passion for learning. So head on over to thetwosalesguys.com/GCP. So you were recently on a TED Talk, one of the Freshers Wellness events, and it was funny because you brought up an analogy to relating to a toilet bowl. And the listeners found it quite funny. And I think it would be really interesting for you to share a little bit about that for our audience.
Yeah, with due respect, I have to give the credit, you know, to Hans Sarris, because he was the father of the stress theory. And the reason why I came up with the toilet bowl analogy is because Hans Sarris is actually a physiologist. You know, historically and humorously, you know, physiologists love toilet bowls. They are wildly crazy about toilet bowls. They would dream about toilet bowls even when they sleep, you know, and they love them so much. You know, toilet bowls can teach us everything we need to know about our body as far as physiology is concerned. And imagine, you know, you just went to the washroom, you know, the toilet, and you just took the lid off, you know. So picture yourself going to the toilet, and after you're done with your business, you flush the toilet and you got a problem. And the problem is what? The depletion of water. So the toilet bowl is dehydrated, just like our body, right? It needs to be filled with water. So fortunately, we have a source of water, spraying the water out, and you get a pipe that secretes the water. So that is like doing something that's necessary. It secretes the water. So water is pouring out, and eventually the water level begins to rise. And at this point, there's something in the toilet that sense what the level is, the water in the system. And that's what we call a flotation device, which begins to go up. And the next thing you have is a critical feature. That's the set point. And a set point is the optimal level of water as to how high the water should go before we turn off the source of the water. Mm. And before you turn off the secretion of water, the final thing is the mechanism that tells us information of the water height, the sensor of the floating dinghy. And I think what it does is it transduces that we have got the water at the set point level into a signal to stop the source of the water. And Hans Sarris would probably call this the negative feedback system, which sends a signal out that we have reached a set point, and that turns off the secretion of that one. And there are, you know, all sorts of physiological system in how the body would work that way. So in a similar analogy, you know, our brain actually can decide how much of growth hormones that we want in our bloodstream, you know. So what it measures is that how much stuff is in the circulation and needs a flotation device like the toilet bowl system. And the brain would be sensitive to what particular sort of hormones that the body is required. So there has to be a set point, you know, some rules in the part of the brain that initiates it, the secretion of growth hormones. And in a way, it transduces like this sensor signal that shuts off some of the secretions. So they got to be projections, you know, cables coming out from the part of the body that that is measuring the hormone heading down to the negative feedback regulation. So these are all the fancy things that happen, you know, that having a set point change, like for females, if they're ovulations or when there's a set point change based on a ratio of two hormones. So basically, it's great, just like the toilet bowl system.
It's amazing how well the body can respond to these different situations. It's so complex, but yet so powerful. I mean, you know, taking that a little bit further with the mind controlling the hormones and all of that, how do we as individuals now be able to identify? I think this is one of the things we wanted our audience to be able to take away is like, how do they recognize that they're currently stressed out? Like, what are the symptoms? What can they recognize? So I think awareness is a very important first step. And so understanding that would be very helpful.
Yes, absolutely. You know, where I'm coming from is from Hong Kong. And in Hong Kong, we have what we call a city sicknesses culture. So I think it probably not just happened in Hong Kong, but globally. So we have employees, you know, complaining. They have, you know, neck pain or back pain, stomach pain, all the pains, or constipations, food allergy, skin allergy, and we have what we call eczema. And from a behavioral perspective, they would start to indulge in social withdrawal, right? So these are, you know, some of the signs that that a person can recognize when they might be stressed out.
Well, I know there's a set point for me with quotas. Like, I wish that the executives around the world would understand that there's a set point at a certain point when they give you quotas that my toilet bowl is going to overflow and I'm going to explode. I think the analogy is great. And I think, like, what you said about recognizing stress, I think it's challenging because there's so many different things. And I guess, like, it's probably like, does it vary by the individual, like the signs of stress?
Yes, definitely. Because stress is very subjective. And, you know, actually, after Hans Selye's postulated about how stress can be measured scientifically, what really happened after that was that when people perceive the stresses differently, the way the body reacts is different as well. Mm. So in a way, in today's context, a lot of people, they commonly overlook it, right? Because people in today's context are shaped into the notion that hard work is rewarded.
Yeah.
So therefore, having stress or the bad stress is rewarded. And then it becomes a norm. And I think the scary part is that an employee may be shaped to think that they need to be stressed, which may or may not be beneficial. And they would probably indulge in a coping mechanism, like not just coffee, it might be alcohol or eating or even drugs, you know, so to speak, you know. And that's the way of coping. And the body is like giving all the false alarms that they are doing very well.
And does talking about it help?
Yes, absolutely. Talking about it definitely is an outlet for the stress. And actually in the TED talk, I shared about some experiments that has been conducted scientifically, how stress requires outlets. Because let's say there's a rat and we gave it some kind of stresses. We shock it, you know, with electricity. And what happened after that was that the rat starts to develop an ulcer. And we actually had a second rat and we did exactly the same with the same intensity, the time, and we shocked the rat with electricity. And we also gave the rat some wood to bite on. And what's interesting was that the rat that has something to bite on didn't develop an ulcer. So in a way, we can see that we need an outlet. And what also very interesting was there was another experiment where we have two rats in the cage and the first rat was shocked with electricity. And what happened was the rat ran over to the second rat and bite the second rat. So who gets the ulcer? The rat that didn't bite or the rat that was bitten. So you guys know the answer, right? The rat that was bitten had the ulcer. So this is, in psychology, we call it a displacement aggression. So some people, they might cope with stress in a way they would displace the aggression. So it could be yelling at people, maybe biting people or attacking them with guns or knives or whatsoever, so to speak. But I think there are also healthy ways of having outlets. And I think Sigmund Freud did a really great job on that. And he talked about healthy defense mechanism, like maybe going to the gym, you know, or doing something that's healthy. So these are some of the healthier ones. And yes, we all need outlets in terms of regulating our stresses.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that Sean and I really want to try to do with the podcast is get companies to be more comfortable letting their people speak about their emotions and signal that they're stressed. You know, it should be okay for an employee to come to their boss and say, hey, I'm a little bit stressed out or I'm a little bit overwhelmed, and really create that safe space for their people as an outlet for them. And ultimately, so that managers can have information for them to be able to deal with it and help their employees through stressful situations.
Yes, yes. Talking does provide an outlet of stress. And as mentioned just now, that because emotions, you know, can escalate into more severe forms. So on a positive light, just by talking, it may help to allow the emotions to transform to positive ones.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a good segue into techniques and things that you've learned that can help people manage stress. And so, you know, for our audience, Adrian, do you have any techniques that you can share that would help reduce the effects of stress, either when they're experiencing it or, you know, prior to a particularly stressful moment?
Yeah, there are many stress techniques out there, and probably some of you guys have heard of it. It's called a mindfulness or deep breathing. But for me, I have recently researched on the world's fastest method, and it's probably around 2 to 3 minutes. You guys want to try?
Yeah, let's do it.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's do it. So the first step is close your eyes. But be careful. If you're driving a car, please don't close your eyes. And so the first step is deep breathing. So breathe in, 5 seconds in, 2, 3, 4, 5, and breathe out, 2, 3, 4, 5, and breathe in again, 2, 3, 4, 5, and out, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you can try to do it automatically on your own. And this is what we call anchoring. When we are counting our breaths, we will free our mind to not to focus on the stresses, but to focus on the counting. Now, the second step is, while we are doing the counting and deep breathing, is we think about how the breath is penetrating the heart. And this is what we call a heart-focused breathing. So breathe in through the heart, 2, 3, 4, 5, and out through the heart, 2, 3, 4, 5, and in again, 2, 3, 4, 5, and out, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the third step is, while we breathe in for 5 seconds and through the heart, and breathe out 5 seconds through the heart, we also try to elicit a positive emotions. And one of the easiest emotions that we can elicit is what we call gratitude. So I would like to invite you guys to think of an emotion that you're grateful about. It could be maybe some people in your life is helping you with some of your tasks. Or maybe you have accomplished some of your tasks and you're grateful that the task has been accomplished. So think about this, something that you're grateful about. And we combine them with your breathe in, 2, 3, 4, 5, through the heart. And breathe out, 2, 3, 4, 5. Breathe in, 2, 3, 4, 5. And gratitude, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's have a final one. Deep breathing, 2, 3, 4, 5. Gratitude, and breathe out, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And let's bring the awareness back into where you are and open your eyes. That's it. That's the world's fastest stress relieving technique.
So simple.
And I have a question on that. Like, why through the heart? Like, what does that do for you, Adrian, like to focus on the heart when you're breathing?
Yes, that's a really great question, because the recent research has found that, you know, there's a royal pathway between the heart and the brain. So by focusing on the heart, is like we are signaling the heart to, you know, send the good hormones, you know, to the brain. And that's the fastest way. So some people, after they do this, the world's fastest technique, they would describe how clear their mind is thinking, you know, just by doing this 3-minute protocol. And they go to the meeting, they feel fresh, they feel that they are able to react faster, think faster. and being fully in the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that just to give one comment on that, I forget what study it was before, but I know personally in my life, I felt the effects when you talk about the hormone release of the heart and how it can make your mind respond in these meetings. I've read and studied that, you know, standing on your feet and walking around while you're in a meeting actually causes your brain to focus or be clearer. And I know that when I take phone calls, for example, with customers or have important meetings, when I'm standing up and pacing back and forth in the meeting room, when I can, of course, not in front of the customer sitting down at a table, but I definitely feel sharper. I feel more focused. So similarly, I think you're right in that tie from the heart to the brain. There's definitely something really interesting there.
Yes, yes. And you can consider taking off your shoes and taking off your socks as well, because we can rely on Mother Nature, you know, to help us to relieve our some of our stresses as well. As you know, the stresses can, you know, travel through our body and through our feet and being earthed back to the earth.
Grounded.
Yes. And figuring out just like doing something. I mean, Sean, it's interesting that you said that that helps. I used to think that pacing around helped me on calls. But what I found out is it actually worked me up more. It got me talking a little bit faster. It got me a little bit like even more anxious sometimes. And so I actually had to like learn to slow down and try to sit and be calm and change my postures. Even like sitting back has helped me like take a phone call much more casual, much more relaxed than if I'm like hunched up over the microphone, kind of like I'm attacking the person on the call. So, I mean, I think it's probably like figuring out what works for everybody, because it can be different. But the point is, you know, taking some time to think about what it is that will help you in those moments, especially before. I think breathing, I was even doing some breathing exercises, Adrian, before the interview here. to prepare.
So since we're talking about some techniques, one of the things that I think has dramatically changed in our world today related to COVID is, you know, so I used to go into an office 4 days a week and it was an hour and a half commute each way. And as bad as that commute is, as much stress as that probably added to my life and to my, you know, work environment, there was this disconnect process on the way home, being able to shut off work and get into the home mindset and with my family and all those kinds of things. Now that we're all working remote and we're pretty much working in our home environment, and there's not really that delineation, it's not clear these days. Like, do you have any techniques to help people turn off work in their minds, whether it's the end of the day type of turn off work and get into the home mindset, or maybe your mind is just running in the middle of the night, like you wake up or something? Just, do you have any suggestions to help people like turn off work in their minds?
Yeah, yeah. We have to be aware of three things that's happening in our lives. There's our thoughts, our behavior, and our emotions. So when it comes to our thoughts, we need to be aware of the negative thoughts. And we can actually reframe negative thoughts to become positive ones. And in our behavior, we can probably set up some boundaries that we need to have, you know, sufficient time for ourselves. And it's like what we call the me time. And simple things like exercising regularly can help. And again, we need to be aware of our emotions. So if we are experiencing negative emotions, we can try to find out what triggered the special or specific negative emotions, and we frame the negative thoughts and invite positive emotion to sink in. So I think there are five tips I want to share with you guys. Is the first tip is probably try to indulge in good time management, you know, and that can help to reduce some of the stress. And number two is take enough breaks during working hours. Like as what you have mentioned, you can walk around, go to the pantry or grab some drinks, you know, taking up breaks during the work hours. And tip number three is establish boundaries and know what you can and what you can't handle, and not to be the yes man, you know, to do everything, you know, and it's something that's out of your scope or competency. And number four is learn to delegate our tasks or even ask for help when we are not able to tackle them. And finally, exercise regularly, have healthy meals, eat right, drink right, and also meditate. And it's also important, you know, to find time to do other things that are not work related, such as sports, hobbies. Just do something that you really like. Meditation, reading books, self-help books, listening to this Two Sales Guys podcast. And basically just eating healthy and drinking lots of water would be helpful as well.
So, I mean, besides the whole separation between work and home being completely obliterated, what other impact do you think COVID has had on the stress that workers are experiencing all around the world these days?
Wow, that's a really big one. Because you see, the inability to focus on one task as the current pandemic sees, especially working parents, you know, we're confined with kids, you know, they have to manage the kids on top of their own work schedule. And on a cognitive level, you know, employees, you know, they tend to have, you know, anxious thoughts about losing their jobs. And just in Hong Kong recently, you know, Cathay Pacific, one of the biggest major airliners in Hong Kong, actually laid off over 8,000 employees. And that was really devastating, you know. And you know, so staff or employees, they are so worried that the future is becoming bleak because of the pandemic. And with all the worldwide travel restrictions, we're not able to, you know, travel and take a break. And that even adds up to even more stress.
Yeah.
And as mentioned, there's like now homeschooling, you know, that can be adding a big amount of additional stress to employees who are also parents. Lack of exercise because of a lockdown and exposure to nature. I mean, because of the social distancing, we are not able to experience more of the natural elements of the world. And some families, they are being separated across the borders due to the pandemic. And all these would contribute to the stress.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that people have to manage during this time. I mean, isolation and not being able to draw clear lines between, you know, work and home. I think everyone has their work cut out for them. Are there any pieces of advice that you would give to, you know, companies or managers or really just, you know, anybody that has to help employees navigate through COVID and through stress?
Yes. As mentioned, you know, we can utilize, you know, the techniques which I've shared just now. And also, I think what you guys brought up was allow employees, you know, to talk more about their stress, you know, just having more outlets in their lives, you know, that will be very helpful. And I also want to share, you know, a research that was done recently between a boy and his dog. You know, what we did was we put biofeedback devices on both the boy and the dog, and we captured their heartbeat patterns. And the boy and the dog, you know, they were not in the, they're not having any physical contacts. And the boy was instructed to think of some positive feelings towards the dog, such as caring and compassion. Now, what's interesting is that we noticed significant and positive physiological shifts between the boy's heartbeat patterns. And the most alarming finding was that the boy's heartbeat patterns was able to influence the dog's heartbeat patterns. And that leads to more positive shifts as well. So what's the point? So as we did the world's fastest method, it was able to, you know, change our physiology, and we can then expect positive influences, not just in our heart rate variability, but also we can have positive influences to our colleagues through the physiological and quantum realm. And I think that's a game changer. Mm. So, yes, I think by doing more of the 3-minute protocol before we start doing, having meetings, you know, with our colleagues, whether in person or virtually, I think that is going to be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's so important at the end of the day. Like, I think everyone can practice a little bit of empathy for each other and treat each other like humans, that we're all going through this stuff together. And there's a lot to think about. I think, you know, this was such a great starting point for us on this podcast to have your input on what exactly stress is. And I think it's going to build a really solid foundation for this general topic that Sean and I are going to explore. We know that this is something that you think about, study about, you know, talk about all the time. And I can imagine you're going to continue to come out with interesting content and ideas and research on the topic. So where can our listeners find you online?
Yes, you can visit my website at dradrianlow.com. Adrian is A-D-R-I-A-N. Low is L-O-W. So dradrianlow.com. And you can like my Instagram is dr.adrianlow. And my Facebook page is Dr. Adrian Low as well.
Wonderful. Amazing. Yeah. We really appreciate, you know, you taking time to join us here and help our audience, you know, somewhat get a baseline of understanding what stress is and some really interesting techniques that I think we can all apply. So thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate that.
It's my pleasure. And I also appreciate both you guys, you know, to Sales Guys Podcast, you know, to help with what's happening globally. And you can see the numbers rising up in the US and but how you guys are using this as a platform, you know, to help alleviate some of the stressors. I also appreciate that.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you so much for listening to The Two Sales Guys. Coming up on our next episode, we're going to discuss what it's like being on COVID Island. We're going to highlight what's happened, what's changed, and what it's like to move into a remote role. Additionally, we'll cover the stress and pressures that come along with such a change. We'll also discuss how businesses have changed the way that they think and the way that they measure sales performance during the pandemic. Also, what can we do as sellers to manage all these new changes and the additional stress that comes with being remote? If you've enjoyed all the content so far, please head on over to our website, thetwosalesguys.com, and follow us on all of our social media accounts, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We appreciate all the support, and thanks for listening.